The most notorious of Jordan's prisons is the old fortress of Al-Jafar, known for decades as the place where troublesome men went to be forgotten. It lies outside a Bedouin village of the same name, on a road that marks the outer boundary of human habitation in the country's fierce southeastern desert. Beyond the prison, the terrain flattens into a basin of baked mud that stretches to the horizon without a hill or rock or stubble of grass. The ancient sea that once stood here evaporated eons ago, leaving an emptiness like a missing limb, a void so unnatural that it stirs feelings of dread among the few travelers who pause for a look. "There's a terrible loneliness," wrote filmmaker David Lean, who shot parts of Lawrence of Arabia on the same mudflats in 1962 and pronounced the place more deserted than any desert I've ever seen. His picture editor, Howard Kent, would describe Al-Jafar as, simply, a warning of what hell is like. It was at this spot that British military overseers chose to build an imposing prison with limestone walls and high watchtowers for detainees regarded as too dangerous for ordinary jails. And it was here, years later, that the Jordanians began the practice of quarantining Palestinian militants and other radicals viewed as threats to the state. Hundreds of men, many of them held without formal charge, languished in stifling, vermin-infested cells where they endured temperature extremes, rancid food, and a catalog of abuses later documented by United Nations investigators. Newly arriving prisoners were routinely beaten until they lost consciousness. Others were flogged with electric cables, burned with lit cigarettes, or hung upside down by means of a stick placed under the knees, a position the guards gleefully called grilled chicken. Over time, the monarchy grew weary of the costs of running a prison so isolated from the country's population and so damaging to its reputation. In 1979, the last of its inmates were transferred to other jails, and Al-Jafar was abandoned to the scorpions and its own ghosts. Years passed, and then, in a sudden shift, the old prison was resurrected. Officials of the Public Security Directorate had grown worried about the behavior of a band of anti-government zealots in the country's central Swaka prison, and in 1998, they decided to isolate the group to prevent the contagion from spreading. The officials reopened one of Al-Jafar's dusty wings and dispatched an army of workers to sweep out corridors and prepare a large cell where all could be housed together. 25 bunk beds were assembled and stacked in cramped rows, and a new door of latticed steel was bolted across the cell's entrance, the room's only opening other than air slits cut into walls at knee level. When the grounds were ready, the department appointed a warden and hired the usual complement of guards, laundrymen, and cooks. The inmates were too few to justify the hiring of a separate prison physician, and so it was that Basil Al-Sabah, a recent medical school graduate assigned by the health department to the local village, was pressed into service as the doctor of record for 50 of the most dangerous men in Jordan. It was an unwelcome assignment for Sabah, a tall 24-year-old with boyish good looks, and he complained bitterly about the posting. Prisons in Jordan were vile places, and this one exceeded all others, at least by reputation. Sabah's anxiety deepened on his very first day as the warden, a middle-aged colonel named Ibrahim, sat him down to review a list of safety precautions. When dealing with inmates such as these, the warden cautioned, it was essential to stay on the other side of the bars at all times, even during medical examinations. And Sabah shouldn't be lulled into thinking that a metal door was protection enough, he warned. These people are very dangerous, Ibrahim said. Even if they're not physically dangerous, they have a way of affecting you. Even I have to be careful that they don't affect me. The warden went on to describe the peculiarities of the new arrivals. From their strange dress, most insisted on wearing an Afghan-style tunic over their jailhouse uniforms because tight-fitting prison trousers were regarded as too revealing, to their ability to make converts out of hardened criminals and even prison employees. At Swaka, so many guards had fallen under their spell that prison officials were forced to limit shifts to 90 minutes in any sector where the inmates might be encountered. As the tour was ending, the warden repeated his warning about the prisoners. There was one inmate, the sect's apparent leader, whose seductive powers were extraordinary, he said. He was the one called Makdisi, a religious scholar and preacher of considerable gifts, capable of infecting and twisting minds like a Muslim Rasputin.